As the train emerged from the tunnel, it came to a grinding stop. Moist scrambled to his feet and clambered back down across the flatbed to find out what had happened to the rest of the gang. He was relieved to discover the crew of the guards van all more or less unharmed, including Of the Twilight, the Darkness and his group of goblins, Fred Colon, Nobby Nobs, Cheery Little Bottom, Detritus and Blue John, who was still hanging on to the last carriage, keeping the train together. There were also a few rather bewildered engineers and train drivers, some of whom had been trying to catch up with their sleep when the attack came, but who had apparently done their best. Moist hadn't noticed Nobby and Colon in the melee, but decided that he would not be surprised to hear that they had acquitted themselves with great derring do, and of course it was such a pity that it would turn out everyone else had been too busy to see them doing it. Even so, looking around the few groaning grags still on the train, Moist acknowledged that Nobby and Colon, if given no alternative, could fight like tigers, especially tigers with the nasty weaponry of the streets, where anything went, and wherever it went, it could be very, very painful. Colon, in particular, was master of the underhand, and some of the groaning was familiar to Moist as the famous Ankh Morpork lullaby. Moist never thought of himself as a leader of men, so he delegated in circumstances such as these. The chore of marshalling went to Fred Colon, known to all for his excellent shouty voice that turned his face an unusual shade of puce and was expelled at a volume that even Iron Girder would have envied. Such grags as were alive, or weren't definitely dead, were trussed up before being taken to the guards' van, where, Moist suspected, Commander Vimes would have a little talk with them about this and that, and names and places, and who and when, and what dreadful manners they had. Lovely. And now a figure leaned out of the armoured carriage. It was Aaron.
"The king is safe. Thank you all. Iron Girder came in for a hammering, but the grags that managed to get onto the footplate were shown the furnace by Stoker Blake."
Moist winced at that. He had been close to the furnace a great many times when it had been opened by the stoker, and it was instant suntan time, but if you were standing in the wrong place at the critical moment, it was instant fiery death. The journey onward, with the couplings once more in place, was altogether a sombre ride, for the victors as well as for the surviving dwarfs, awaiting their dreaded conversation with the blackboard monitor, who, it was believed, could cause you and your family never to have existed, rubbed away, as it were, in the chalk dust of the blackboard. A little later, Iron Girder gently kissed the buffers at the Bionk railhead, and the first person to step down onto the hastily erected platform was Rhys Reeson. He was greeted by a very large and extremely agitated rotund man who had the word Burgomaster stamped firmly into his demeanour. He was sweating cobs, and a fat man can sweat just as much as an engine. He genuflected to the king, an achievement considering his shape, which was, not to put too fine a point on it, a globe.
"Welcome back, sire," he said, panting. "The humans of Bionk have always had a good relationship with your countrymen, and I sincerely hope that this amicable arrangement is going to continue."
This invitation was uttered at very high speed, and Moist saw it for what it was, a plea saying, "Please don't hurt us, we are fairly decent people and have always accepted your highness's claim to the scone of stone." The unsaid codicil being, "Please don't hurt us, and above all, don't interfere with the running of our mercantile activities, please. Please?" Rhys gripped the proffered and rather sweaty hand and said, "I'm so sorry if you have been inconvenienced by the recent unpleasantness, Humphrey," a gesture which left the Burgomaster all smiles.
"Oh, it wasn't too bad, Your Majesty. It was a bit of a nuisance when the others started knocking down the clacks and all that. But you know how it is, it's like a family squabble in the house next door, where you know it's not your business, so you're ready with tea, sympathy, and possibly bandages and medicaments. And next time you meet the couple next door, you don't look too hard and mind your business and are still friends on the morrow. And anyway, her ladyship got involved, and once she'd made a couple of examples, well, thank goodness we had our clacks back. She's firm but fair, is Lady Margolotta, and remarkably swift."
The sweating Humphrey knew full well he was talking about the most influential vampire in the world, whilst at the same time giving her the appearance of an elderly lady who only had to bang her walking stick on the floor to get total respect.
"Of course, all families have their ups and downs," Humphrey continued. "Those little spats so easily started and so quickly left behind with no real damage done."
Behind the Burgomaster, the train was unloading its passengers, while Iron Girder occasionally hissed or spat in the way a locomotive has, making it clear it is not entirely quiescent. Moist could hear Vimes debriefing Captain Sally von Humperding, the watch's only vampire member, who had been seconded to the Bjonk watch. They came over to report. "Sally tells me that even though all communication from within Schmalzberg has been cut off, reports have been reaching the watch that all is not well with the conspirators," said Vimes. He looked to Sally for confirmation.
"Yes," she said. "Our sources indicate that the Grag known as Ardent—"
She was interrupted by a snort of rage from Rhys and a rattle of axes from his assembled compatriots.
"Him again," snarled Rhys.
"Yes," said Sally, "him and a few others we've been trying to locate after the massacre in Quirrem. Well, it seems that Ardent and his followers are losing support. They're not having it all their way. There is unrest."
"Good," said Rhys. "We can use that." "An Albrechtsen?" asked Aaron.
"Well," Sally smiled,
showing a hint of fang, this being the most appropriate place in the world to let them get some air.
"Well, and loyal to you, sire."
A rather smart goblin messenger insinuated his way through the crowd and passed a message to Sally, who read it.
"Ah," she said, "it's a message from Albrechtsen. It seems the opposition know you've arrived, sire. Albrechtsen would like you to know that he's being well treated and has been able to follow the progress of Ein Gerda thanks to the goblins."
Rhys turned and looked at Simnel and Moist and said, "Thank you and Sir Harry for getting me here safely, and Ein Gerda too. At the appropriate time, you will know my generosity, and I'd like to talk to you further, but do excuse me, I have a kingdom to reclaim." Addressing the company of dwarfs now fully assembled on the platform and armed to the teeth, he proclaimed, "Let it be known that the Low King has arrived and will take his place on the Scone of Stone. Anyone wishing to deny him that trivial pleasure should be prepared to back up their coherent and well-founded objections with weaponry. It really is quite as simple as that. This message will be carried into Schmalzberg by Bashful Bashfulson, a highly respected and knowledgeable dwarf known to all, accompanied by my trusted secretary Aaron. We should also include Commander Vimes, the Blackboard Monitor, and one-time ambassador to see fair play. Remember that at all times, tampering with the king's messengers is a matter of treason. Be aware, I'm not going to be a nanny about this. Insurgent dwarfs will get their just deserts." The sound of Vimes loudly lighting his cigar broke the silence. "Let the others go first. I'll go along in a minute or two," he said. Moist, of course, hadn't been at Combe Valley, but right now he wondered if he was about to see the ghost of Combe Valley's second incarnation. Except it would be dwarf against dwarf. He wanted to shout out, "This is nuts!" and realised that, in fact, he had said it aloud. To his surprise, the king said, "Certainly so, Mr. Lipwig. It beggars all reason, doesn't it? But sooner or later there comes a time when you have to take names and crack skulls. I'm sorry, it's at the other end of the spectrum from the little chat, and it's what happens when reason no longer holds sway." "But you're all dwarfs. What can you possibly achieve?" groaned Moist, who for the rest of his life would always remember the tone of the king's voice. "Tomorrow. That, Mr. Lipwig, is what we can achieve. Tomorrow." The arrival of the messengers sent an immediate buzz around the multiple caverns of Schmalzberg, somehow the centre of the galaxy when it came to hubbub of all sizes and rumour mills that turned faster than the mills of the gods. Rumour flowed like quicksilver. The phenomenon might be called the dwarf clacks, were it not for the fact that the clacks didn't scramble the messages on a whim, thought Moist as he followed Rhys and the main band of dwarfs down into the honeycomb that was Schmalzberg. The myriad noises flowing up from below through every tunnel and cavern were merging into a kind of audible mist, or, he thought, fog. It simmered around the earlobe, the terrible sounds and confusions of war. But now, individual sounds were getting through, raised voices, screams, and the clatter of weaponry, punctuated with the occasional yell and dwarfish curses, which are known to have a life all of their very own. Further down, they came across Aaron, who was waiting with blood dripping from his sword. He noticed Moist's look and shrugged. "There was a Grag. He fought hard but would not submit, preferring death to ignominy, and so I accommodated him." That last phrase contained more emphasis than Moist had heard for a very long time. Aaron turned to Rhys and reported. "There have been certain clashes of opinion, Your Majesty," he said, pointing to several dwarfs being treated in what would have been an impromptu field hospital had it been in a field. Swords, hammers, and axes were being deployed below as the king carried on marching until they came to what must be the Great Hall, the largest cavern of them all. As they passed through the portal, Moist came to a halt, trying to get a grip on this subterranean landscape lit by the enormous chandeliers of dribbling candles, along with cressets and great vats of squirming verms. Verms are somewhat like glowworms, but with a stink that illumines. They can be found in deep, dark places, where they subsist on the effluvia of any creatures that may arrive there. They are very useful to tomb raiders and others of that kidney, who in turn are often very useful to the verms, especially their kidneys. Squirming verms writhing in the corners. So there was light, he thought, but a strange light that was somehow negotiating with the eyes. You could see, but what you saw was the darkness.
"Well, it's not a war any more," said Vimes, suddenly there beside him. "And not too many serious outcomes, except for the grags. That's dwarf-on-dwarf war. A hell of a lot of shouting and accusing and spitting. A lot like cats, really, but that's dwarfs for you. They're not that stupid. Bags of bravado and sabre-rattling, but no one really wants to get hurt. You fight, hoping for a small wound that looks good afterwards. Something to show the grandchildren, but really, when it comes to it, dwarf against dwarf, it generally settles down."
Vimes puffed his cigar and continued.
"Mind you, if it were dwarf against troll, this place would be running with blood. On the whole, it's like the taverns of Ankh-Morpork on a Saturday night. Everyone is full of gumption and pissy bravery and beer. Much too much beer. And then afterwards, it's just a lot of groaning until they see the light."
In fact, what Moist could see nearby was dwarfs in small groups, some of them bandaged, in positions which suggested that war as such, if not over, had been set aside for a breather and maybe a decent quaff. And younger dwarfs were going between the hurt and wounded with flagons. And one by one, the dwarfs got up, shook hands with the nearest dwarf and walked haphazardly to the next group, where perhaps they would sit and chat and make up stories of near misses and clever parries and similar boozy boastings. Little by little, dwarf normality was flowing through Schmalzberg once again.
"Pissed as farts," said Vimes, "but at the bottom, not bad. Just susceptible to rabble-rousers," he sighed again. "Maybe this time they'll have learned. And on that day, Nobby Nobbs will be a shining hero."
And that was all it took, Moist found himself wondering. After all the adrenaline of the train journey, the ambushes, the attacks, the bridge, the sleepless nights, expecting at every turn to hear the swish of a scythe and to find that this time his luck really had run out. And then Rhys gave a fine speech and just walked in and took back the kingdom. "I was expecting them to put up more of a fight," he said. "You know, more of a glorious battle that would become the stuff of legends."
"That's a very foolish thing to say, Mr. Lipvig," said Vimes. "There's nothing glorious about times like this. People have died, not necessarily good people and not too many, but nevertheless, the face you wear on a battlefield should be a solemn one until the time when things are cleaned up and the real world drips its way in."
Moist felt the shame welling up from his boots and said, "Commander, I stand abashed quite sincerely." And instantly, Vimes's face was eyeballing his, and the commander exclaimed,
"Really? It seems it's not just the railway breaking new ground here."
For once, short of a ready reply, Moist turned to see what had become of Rhys and his party. Rhys Reeson had entered the cavern at a run. He headed straight for its centre, where stood the scone of stone. Now he looked around and demanded,
"Where is Ardent? I want him brought here, and as many of his followers as still remain. Though doubtless most have run, this place is full of exits."
Bashful Bashfulson shouted,
"I have the scoundrel here, sire."
The assembly of dwarfs went into the usual seemingly endless dwarfish hubbub, followed by a deep intake of breath from all concerned when Ardent was brought forward. His expression Moist couldn't read, but Moist, the man for atmospheres, could tell that Ardent was already somewhere beyond sanity, whilst Rhys seemed as cool and calm as ever, however fearful he might have been on the inside. And Moist would have wagered the mint that the king wasn't actually fearful at all. There was something in his demeanour that suggested an absolute assurance that this day was his, or indeed hers, as he finally allowed the thought to creep back into his consciousness. Sitting on the hallowed scone of stone, with Ardent in front of him, Rhys said, "You were dealt with mercifully after the Combe Valley Accord, and still you thought it was right to try to take this kingdom from me.
You encouraged those who tortured families to get their own way. What would people think of me if I had even a most minute inclination to treat you kindly?
You are clever, and many dwarfs speak highly of you, but your cleverness has been used to undermine my rule and make dwarfs appear to be vicious and stupid criminals in the eyes of all other species. What have you to say in front of me and your kin?
Ardent was silent.
Very well, said the king. No answer. You leave me no alternative. In times gone by, a dwarf king would execute someone like you as a matter of course. And then there was the sound of metal, and the king stood up, axe in hand. At last, the light of terror passed across Ardent's face. The king said, Oh, I see. Then perhaps, as I am, you know, a moderniser, as you always say with a sneer, perhaps I'll deal with you as a moderniser should. Therefore, you will go on trial, and I shall see to it that among the jury there will be the families of those the Greggs tortured, and those surviving guests of the wedding in Tlamedos, and all the others whose lives have been unnecessarily troubled by your existence in this world. They may be merciful, and I will accept their verdict.
Ardent remained silent, and the king said, Take him away in chains, but keep him alive, if only as a reminder for me that being a king is not an easy job.
As Ardent was led away to much applause, Rhys turned to the assembled dwarfs. Now I suggest someone goes and brings me my friend Albrecht Albrechtsen, who, to our shame, has been shackled and stuffed into a dungeon. Then perhaps the people delegated to go and let him out might hand him a flagon of brandy and, if practicable, run away. He has a piquant sense of humour.
Rhys sat down again on the scone of stone and said, in tones that echoed around the cavern, It is usual at this time for me to say, My fellow dwarfs.
There was a sucking feeling in the air as the king went on.
But today I'll say, ladies and gentlemen dwarfs, I am here not only to reclaim my scone of stone, which over the years has seen many important and notable buttocks sitting on it. I wonder how many of those buttocks down the years were female.
The sharp intake of breath by the whole gathering now seemed to draw all the air out of the place as the low king continued.
Hear me out.
It is well known that the gender of a dwarf is entirely their secret unless they decide otherwise. And I recall that in Ankh-Morpork a few years ago, there was a fashion show for dwarfs only. I was there incognito, and I recognised a few of you, quite possibly purchasing for use in the privacy of your own home. Shatter made a lot of money that day, and I understand that Madame Sharn wants to open a new shop here. Here in Schmalzberg. Does this thought frighten anybody?
In these days, I think not. And all I'm doing now, my friends, is to introduce to you something important. It is the truth. You know, that thing which remains when all the lies have been burned away. And now I will tell you that I have decided to no longer be your king.
There was an extra hubbub of indrawn breaths and sotto voce speculation from the populace at large, with all eyes focused on the king. The magic was broken, or possibly enhanced, by the tiny sound of a match being struck by Commander Vimes, and the fat cigar glowed like a beacon. Vimes smiled and nodded at the king, and in that moment Moist realised that Vimes had probably always known, or at least since the famous adventure several years before when he was ambassador to Rhys's election as low king. There was a disturbance as the crowd parted to allow the venerable Albrecht Albrechtsen to make his way to stand by the low king, who greeted him warmly in the traditional dwarf manner of butting helmets. A part of dwarf etiquette that outsiders find near impossible to master, the traditional helmet butt is a little less vigorous than the manoeuvre known on the tougher streets of Ankh-Morpork as the shamlegger kiss, but it must also not be so gentle as to imply that either the giver or the receiver is a sissy.
Welcome, old friend. I'm sorry that you have been inconvenienced by my absence. Those responsible will pay for that, he said in a loud voice, glaring at the crowd. Then more quietly to Albrecht, Rhys said, You've arrived at a good moment. I'm in the middle of making an announcement.
So I heard, said Albrechtson. What are you doing? You don't have to stand down, you won.
The low king laughed. Stand down? Oh, I don't think so, boyo, you'll see.
Turning back to the crowd, Rhys took a deep breath and said, "This will be surprising news to many of my subjects, but I am female, just like your mothers were, and therefore am in truth your queen." There it was again, the famous dwarf intake of breath. Even Albrechtson seemed startled. Moist looked at Aaron and noticed the dwarf's mailed fist was resting, oh so lightly, on his sword. Bashfulson was standing right behind Albrechtson, watching him closely. Next to Moist, Vimes carefully laid down his glowing cigar on a rock ledge and tensed. This could be very interesting, Moist thought.
"And if you think your queen is not as good a ruler as your king, do you really believe your mother was inferior to your father?"
The queen laughed.
"I see embarrassment among all of you. That's good. The thing about being embarrassed is that sooner or later you aren't, but you remember that you were."
There was a noticeable shift in atmosphere as the queen carried on, saying, "I have seen that in warm breasts there is a truth which is not to be denied. But we dwarfs seem to deny everything, building little worlds inside a big one. And one might ask, what are we trying to escape from, unless it is ourselves? We are dwarfs, yes, but we could be better than our dwarf ancestors stuck in their holes." When she had finished, the queen looked around at the assembled dwarfs and said, "Well, no dwarf man enough to challenge me?" Several eyes turned to Albrechtson, who looked thoughtful but did not move. Bashfulson relaxed his stance. And suddenly the queen's finger was pointing, and she said, "Shod Awbreaker, I always thought of you as a level-headed dwarf with your head screwed on, although possibly against the thread." And Moist felt the exultation of those who hadn't been the one facing the finger and the misery of Shod Awbreaker, and he wondered, had the low queen's voice changed, or had it always been like that? She hadn't threatened, but a visible threat was in the air. She had them in her hand, and she was squeezing, and the dwarf stepped backwards as she pointed at him, and she said, "Where are your grags now, Shod Awbreaker?" The said Shod became a picture of panic. "Not my grags, my queen!" This was possibly because Aaron had passed the queen a thick file. The queen licked a finger and riffled through the pages, looking down, and said, "Really? Then I must have been misinformed." She turned to the rest of the dwarfs and said, "I wonder if I have been misinformed about all of you." But the assembled company was watching the flicking pages, trying not to crane to see whether their name was on the list. It was laughable. She had them by the short and curlies, and she said, "Strange, isn't it, that when the chips are down, they take other chips with them. If anyone wants to test my claim, then let them step forward now." There were murmurings, dwarfs turning around to other dwarfs, and the traditional aforesaid hubbub of such occasions, and then there was a hush as Albrechtson spoke.
"My queen,"
he said, and the hubbub bubbled. It was the unexpected moment, the great defender of all that was dwarfish now having a stock-taking of his thoughts.
"My queen, we fortuitously live, and so we should learn. I have always considered myself knowledgeable, a true scholar of the ways of Tak. But the past days have shown me that even I have lessons to learn. In my little dungeon, I heard my ways changing and understood the meaning of humility. In fact, I am prepared to admit before you all that some of those lessons were taught to me by a goblin a fraction of my age, whom I am proud to call my friend."
Moist saw that the old dwarf was crying. Albrechtson hesitated, and then shouted,
"Tak save the queen, and I will fight anyone who says otherwise."
And Moist thought, "Oh, blast, it's all going to start over again." But the assembled dwarfs made no move to take Albrechtson up on his challenge. The sea of faces in the hall looked universally stunned, as if someone had announced that gold was, to be honest, not that interesting after all. The queen gracefully thanked Albrechtson, then pulled herself up and said, "I am well aware that many of you have financed the Grags and their entourage, and I know the names, yes, indeed I know the names of those who'd kill for a curdled thesis. In the fullness of time, there will be no redemption for them. We were generous after the mess of Coombe Valley, and those were the stupid days. But if the Grags and their friends think they can take my scone from me, they will know me for what I am, your queen. I believe all of you will have heard of Queen Inki of Lanka, yes? Well, I consider her my role model. But right now, I'm looking for peace for all the world,
and specifically for myself and my child." And in the thundering susurration that followed this, there was one dwarf suddenly standing next to the Queen. It was Aaron, and he drew his sword, not against anyone in particular, but nevertheless very ready to defend his wife and his unborn child. Over the uproar, the Queen said, "And is there anyone here now who doubts that I am the Queen by right? It seems to me our ancestors thought their mothers were inferior. Well, as I say, I am soon to be a mother, so which of you gentlemen would like to try and take my scone from me?" Moist looked around. There were no takers. The Queen looked dangerous to touch, and she didn't even have a weapon in her hands. It had to be game, set, and whole box full of matches. "Very well," the low Queen of the Dwarfs concluded. "There will be a feast for all who come with goodwill, and there will, of course, be much quaffing." She smiled and added, "That includes cocktails for those who like them. Believe me, the world is upside down, as it was meant to be. Praise Tak, and praise Ein Gerda, and all those who built her, fed her, and polished her."